welcome to another broadcast of Project Urantia on the Artists First Radio Network. An ever-growing number of people are beginning to realize that perhaps our history has been influenced by beings from off of Earth. In my opinion, one gentleman who knows more about that than just about anybody is our guest of honor every week. It's Michael in Maui. Hi, Michael.
Hi, Z-Man.
How is life? My nephew's out there. He's working in Hawaii, Honolulu, I think, now.
Oh, well, that's nice. The weather's not the perfect weather that we usually try to keep, but it's something that happens. We got a little more cloudy skies and not quite as sunny. But, you know, still Hawaii.
Yeah, it beats a cold and rainy high 30s in Ohio.
Yeah, we got perfect, like, 72 degrees or so.
Well, Michael, has anything happened in the world in the last week that causes you any concern or you'd like to bring up tonight?
Well, you know, a lot of times I'm just picking the minds of the celestials a lot of times in terms of where their focus is. And this morning I did the same thing, just wonder what you're looking at. And of all things, they were looking at the Middle East and kind of giving me indication that there is going to be some new blood terms of leadership, and they even have questions over that, because we are beings of free will. I mean, we are not, as we talked about before, you know, as far as predestined or predetermined in what we're going to do. That's not really true. We're free agents, and that's a very important fact. And although they can see the rise of new individuals, new personalities, in a very similar sense to how we can. So they're of course much more practiced in terms of the concept of remote viewing, but we have that capability, which is interesting. Just before I started speaking, they gave me an image of what I might want to give the audience more knowledge on, so that they might grow and really seek a little bit more information. As we were talking about just a little bit about Anunnaki, or about ideas of other information, old information. And one of the things that Anunnaki came to my mind, and that was something that Zachariah Sitchin made, you know, quite popular in terms of explaining that from those who, you know, from outer space came to Earth, or whatever Anunnaki means. But I actually spent time with them and was able to get their perspective. And I'm not talking about the higher beings, the beings of higher order than the Anunnaki themselves. I did spend time with them also. But the Anunnaki, as portrayed as people about 8 feet tall and heavily built, strong, muscular, and having hair, curly hair, as a matter of fact, wavy hair. And they also spoke with a deep voice. But an interesting point was, how they looked as in the terms of the histories written by the Babylonians, I believe, in terms of their idea of being superior in that. This was something diametrically opposed to my experience with them, simply because I was probably with powers higher than them, much higher than them. And they looked, and they were the ones that gave me indication and looked at us, or looked at myself as special, because in being seated in this room, which was primarily for education, you might say a classroom of a higher order, in which the highest teacher was there, a Dano, the order of Danos, of a teacher order, and they're quite high in the order of sentient beings. They were seated there, what would be described as exactly described Anunnaki. These guys are huge. And when Dano said, there's royalty in the room, I kind of looked around. I was wondering who would be that royalty, because, you know, so, first thing I look is one of those big guys. And there were, I think, there's two sitting to my left and one or two behind me. So I looked at the guys to my left, and they were looking square at me. And I looked all around, and there was others seated in there that were from different order, more like Tan and Nella, you know, shorter with big head, big eyes. And then there was one guy that looked sort of like a gray, and he's the one guy that they're all there looking at me. You know, instead of everyone looking towards somebody else, they were all looking at me. And then I was being impressed to explain something that we do have special and that we should actually ignite within us, which is the divinity within us, which is the fractal, which is the divinity fractal, which is inside of every being who decides that they are beings of moral choice, free-willed agents of moral choice. And this guiding agent also gives us a very special acuity. We have divine senses. We have the ability to do things like remote viewing. Not only to have something that seems loosely tied to a sense, but it's actually more tightly tied to that divine fractal. It's an additional sense invited or invoked by this fractal, which is a gift. Without it, that connection for many of these extrasensories abilities won't be equipped. But as we initially approach it, there'll be more and more wonderful revelations and exercises in terms of exercising these senses, which are mighty, actually. And this is something that was confirmed, in a sense, by the way they looked at me, these other eight other beings. And I especially remember the Anunnaki types, the big ones, looking at me and actually saying, "It's you. You." So it's a heavy, low voice, and that's a concept. And historically, when the Anunnaki were here, they were here on a mission, but they kind of reinvented their work, essentially what they were supposed to do in uplifting humanity. But one of the factors that they had was they were essentially crippled in a sense of divinity. Their fractal, their divinity within was left behind. They came as almost normal or base mortal. They had the ability for a long lifespan, but essentially did not have the divine essence that we have. And now, I've searched around in many old, very old legends and carvings and stuff on temple walls, and I find some similarities. And there's one in which is very famous, in which the dragon is chasing this sacred energy that he cannot get. And that particular sacred energy, which is often portrayed as a dragon chasing a ball, is the very energy that we are gifted with. And those that have sent me on this mission have made it clear for this particular time to just let the audience know that is so special, and it should be a lifelong endeavor to attune oneself to that beyond escalating any other side thing in terms of career, in terms of just, let's say being a CEO of a gigantic corporation. I mean, it would be like, you know, these things seem to have such dramatic effects in terms of what happens to life here on Earth and civilization. But on an individual basis, a person should never lose the fact that the actual supreme purpose for our life here is to attain that resonance with and become closely aligned and attuned with the divine fractal within us, which opens us to these higher sensory abilities that give us information on what what is going on. And actually, we are given a very short time in terms of our lifespan to attain as much as we can in the body, because it really is a speeding up of the process. Once out of this physical body and in this domain in which we live, kind of a really, really, really free, wide open world of choices, the progress becomes slower, and it doesn't mean that it's or boring or anything. It's just that you no longer have the shortcut of this lifespan and to attain it. And many will and are attaining higher resonances with the divinity within us. In a sense, attaining the circles, the seven circles of psychic attainment. These psychic circles, I did a series of every circle, and it's on, I think, Hello Earth website on the Michael Connection page has a whole series of those. But it's different for everybody, but it's generally the same. But in any case, this is just a general reminder from the folks that have sent me there. Wanting everyone to remember that this is more of something to get you on board, because it's exciting. Every time something you attain something, there's a tremendous awakening. There's just like, how did this happen, and can I repeat it? And you repeat it over and over again, and things like I said, higher order abilities, whether it be telekinetic, where you can just kind of move things around with your actually, it's not from your brain, it's from your center of your being. It seems to feel that way when you move things physically, but for me it was just a smaller things like a spout, fountain spouting, moving the spray right or left and things like that. And even allowing some steerage of some natural forces like a tornado and things like that. But so much more. There's just these other things, and some of them is a peek into the future. Although sometimes when you peek into the future, you can't quite put the pieces together in exact time frames. But anyway, getting back to this morning, it was like they're looking at the Middle East being very well concerned about that. But more for the entirety of our planet is are we going to become on the program, which is the real program for us in terms of being sentient beings. Anyway, I just kind of like rambled on a bit here.
It would be real easy to dream up a scenario, being that here we are, one day away from December 2011. The countdown begins. You could think of a pretty easy scenario involving Syria or some other Middle Eastern countries, or what's going on in Pakistan. Oops, we accidentally killed dozens of Pakistani soldiers at their own military base. Anyway, things could get out of hand in a hurry and culminate in a world war by next December. I mean, that's right?
Yes, I mean, things could get out of hand, especially knowing that, knowing this much, what I really learned was that the, you know, the military-industrial complex, in its present form, took its form because it was basically a buddy-buddy deal that you, use the U.S. dollar for as a reserve currency in exchange for the world. You play with it, you use it, and we'll back you up with our military. That's the way the deal has been going on for years since Kissinger time, but even before then, it became, you know, quite evident that the U.S. was going to have that, but not so much as a war machine, but more as a machine of, you know, I'll help you guys out, I'm Big Brother, and you know, anytime you need, as long as you play the game with us. But more and more people, as the dollar becomes ever more weakened and not as trustworthy, are not looking at our military as, you know, a necessity. The backing up of our military, and even when we went to China, we told them, you know, we got a great military, and said, you do? We just shut down your satellites. So, yeah, so it's changing. So, the idea of having a war machine ready to back up the little guys is not enough anymore. This, especially when the little guys are trying to prove it, that you don't need a big war machine to destabilize the world. And what has to turn around is the whole idea of it being kind of a scheme in which we use to essentially have everybody play the same game. That game is going to end because it was one of the clearest visions that was sent to me, one in which was full waking and eyes open, in which I could actually see what they wanted me to see, that this very, very long duration of economic engine of monetary systems and buildings, whether it be ancient temples or modern factories or wagon wheels or rocket ships, it didn't matter. It's going to come to a halt, but not so much that it was going to disappear, because apparently in that vision which I was sent, the central figure, which was like the profile of some leader on a coin, looked just like that, that was changing over and over as the spokes which ran out from it ran to the sides of the the tank, you might say, and basically was feeding the energy of all the production throughout the ages. It never disappeared. It stopped, but the wheel stopped, and something changed about it. And we are going through that change right now. So ultimately, that is something that is necessary. But the program in which all of our ascension process tilts upon, or is important to our understanding, so that the real program continue on for our planet, is that we should get attuned to that divine gift that makes us special, even to the aliens, even to those who call the Yanunnakis. They looked at me. These are the ones that were written about in Zachariah Sitchin's interpretation of those old tablets. They look at us with a certain recognition that we're not ordinary, although but applying also that freedom of will, freedom of choice, kind of confused state right now, but ultimately it needs to just resonate, and then everything will come together, and the war machine will eventually go away.
You know, when it was mentioned in the meeting you were just describing, that when the celestial being said, we are in the presence of royalty, how do you know they weren't just talking about you and not about us as a race of people? Maybe they were just talking about Michael.
I don't know. I'm kind of expanding the the concept beyond myself. Though immediately it only looked like me within the room, because it was only me in there. But I was the only human from Earth. Riley wasn't in there. I was in the room. But I know that at that particular time period, though, Riley was at the New Jerusalem, we call the mothership. He was there too. So, but it was in a different program. I had left many of the programs that he went through, and he was still in those programs because they're kind of interesting programs. But you know, having a boxing match with an alien, I was invited, but I turned a lot of those things down, and that's the reason that they allowed me to continue the progress. And then I just went on and on and on through the progress until I found the ultimate thing that I was really looking for, which is the purpose of human life.
Well, folks, if you have a question like, what is the purpose of human life, for instance, send us to us at dj@artistfirst.com, and we'll get to some of your emails. We have several already here in just a few minutes, folks. I heard today, listening to an interview with the Japanese physicist, Okaku, was that his last name?
Michio Okaku. Yeah.
Okay. And he was recalling a new scientific discovery where they can implant a memory into the brain of a rat. They can record a memory, wipe that memory, and reinstall it, just like software into a rat. Of course, you know, but just that concept seems amazing. And, of course, you and Riley have always been talking about how these memories have been downloaded, and they are, like Riley would say, at certain times he would be allowed to remember certain things. And here we are talking about this exact same science that, you know, we are in its infancy, but gee, a couple hundred years from now, I bet we could implant and remove memories from people. Just like that, what was that, Total Recall with Arnold Schwarzenegger?
Oh, yeah, well, something like Total Recall. There's other shows that had that concept. But way back, I got introduced to neural networking. Neural networks is a type of way of programming or a way of operating computers so the computers have a certain amount of AI, artificial intelligence, or ability to learn, which is more powerful. We had fuzzy logic a long time ago, but now we have neural networks. And neural networks try to duplicate what goes on in the brain, and through that, it was so well constructed that they have been able to do some very simplistic, which of course is much more complex than you know, putting, you know, a couple of pieces of wire together. But it is able to essentially, yeah, create a network that will learn, and a network that will be able to retain a certain amount of knowledge. But there is also an interesting factor which has been recognized by some anthropologists, psychologists, and this happens to function at a level which they don't fully understand, but there are characteristics that have been passed on, and knowledge, types of knowledge and abilities that have been passed on, they believe, genetically, and they call it genetic imprinting. This type of genetic imprint is something that has it looks like a memory, but it's like there was no need for real experience. It's sort of born with this kind of like a gift, but then you trace it back, you realize that these guys had predecessors in their lineage, back in their lineage somewhere. They had individuals that had, and whether it be their parents directly or grandparents, usually within the grandparents to the through the parents, then, you know, it takes a one generation jump, and it appears again. And this ability is strange to some of these psychologists, because it appears to be knowledge that comes out of nowhere, and they can only say maybe it's genetic imprinting. And there is genetic imprinting in animals, which is simple, and it can see it, it can follow it, and it can see certain behaviors as being kind of a learned ability. And then others which don't look like learned at all, they seem to be born with the tendency to do something in a certain way.
Well, just imagine if you know, generations from now, if they could figure out how to do this, you could just implant, I don't know, calculus things. You could just install abilities into the human brain.
Yeah. Actually, we are, you know, already operating in a sense like that, having all the tools, you know, being stripped of much of the overhead. You know, the thing about our brain is interesting is that we don't possess the largest brain on Earth. Yet we demonstrate abilities far beyond what we have in terms of our natural abilities, in terms of our brain power. You look at an elephant has a tremendous memory. Now, if we could learn and remember everything the elephant could remember, we would have encyclopedic knowledge. But instead of that, what we have is something more powerful, and we created that, which is the internet, or things like the internet and the computers and things like that, that help soup up our thinking process. Now, although we were stripped, in a sense, of the higher levels of, I guess, the biologic machine to have extra memory. You know, we had less RAM, and we essentially had a slower processor. But the program that runs inside of us generates our abilities far beyond that. But it also, again, getting back to the fact that we can tie in to a much higher knowledge source than the internet, and one that is able to bring forth wonderful inventions and things like that into our present day. And that comes through that same gateway, that divine fractal that makes us far above, you know, the brain of an elephant is huge in comparison to it. The brain of a whale is even greater. It's just gigantic. When I looked at the size of a model of the brain of a humpback whale, and it was huge, but much of it has to do with using acoustics to imprint a picture made by sound. And then, of course, some of the other things would be to navigate the entire globe or their area of migration, and having also tremendous memory. And that's something that saying that, you know, having the fantastic abilities or memories is not, you know, the greatest power. There's much more that we possess than do the animals. And even many of those who are, let's say, Anunnaki, who have more brain, you know, bigger heads or whatever.
Well, we've been talking about these topics starting back with Riley and even before that for, you know, like the last decade. Mm-hmm. And to talk about these things and, you know, hear about how celestials may be able to implant the mind in these things, and then years later to start hearing actual science breakthroughs, these exact things that we've been talking about. I mean, this is hardcore evidence that, yes, some of you skeptics out there that may say, well, that's just science fiction. Well, not about the memory part, it ain't. And look at us in our scientific infancy. Imagine what these other beings can accomplish after living bajillions of years. But if I could jump back for a moment to what you said previously about some of the long life ancestors that we've had that, you know, that lived exceptionally long lives in the past. You know, the Bible talks about several people living hundreds and, 900 years or 800 years or something like that. Don't quote me on that, but is it possible that those people, that's an accurate account, and those folks actually lived that length of time and not some made-up calendar that makes it a much shorter life?
Well, one of the problems that was incurred was in the translation between using moons to a solar year, our past one time around the sun versus the moons changing of phases. So some people's lives were counted in moons, not moon phases, complete moon phases versus annual orbits around the sun, to seasonal change. So there is a problem there, and it's, some of the records of extreme long life are inaccurate because they were having to do with more moon phases. And if you divide the moons up, and you come up with a much more natural lifespan as that which we have today. However, our lifespans are being, you know, increased ever more. And there were others who did have truly long lifespans, ones in which exceeded 200-300 years here on Earth, who had a genetics that supported that. But these are no longer with us. Influence in our genome may be still there, because there are others here who have an ability to live, you know, long lives, you know, in excess of over 100 years, you know, without much help. In fact, basically no help. but I think that when it comes down to the really, really Methuselian long lives of thousands of years kind of concept, was a mistake in the counting of the what was a year versus a moon, you know, in terms of age, how age was marked and timed.
Well, you know, that's always been a source of debate among Bible scholars. Another point I wanted to make about science proving what, you know, science fiction speculated was happening. There have been several great studies on ESP. An interesting one was a very controlled, very scientific study where the subject was asked whether or not someone was looking at them. So they had someone stand behind you and look at you or not look at you. And when they would ask you for the time, you'd have to say, yes, there's someone looking at me, or no, there's not. And statistically speaking, it's off the map. There's something going on. How can you know when someone else is looking at you?
That's one of the base things about our reality, is that our consciousness has a lot of influence on how things operate within the domain in which we live, because we're essentially tied together. And when we look at one another, there is a type of connection going on. But it's not based on, you know, let's say, sound or acoustic. It's something that has been spoken of, you know, many, many, many times in terms of the philosophers and religionists throughout. And it's basically talking about this spiritual domain, and that spiritual domain leads to this kind of awareness. And that's true. It's it's being measured, but it is somewhat, it's like a loose sense. You know, we have some very strong senses, let's say, like our visual sense, very acute. We can use it to read things and see things and observe. But we have senses that are less acute, something like our smell, which we sometimes can't describe what it is. Sometimes we can't. We just have a kind of a hunch. They're more mystical. And then we have senses which are even more mystical than perhaps our smell, but seem to follow a similar pathway. And something like being observed is sort of like a smell. And it's a kind of a generalized feeling, but it's not so acute. But it is an awareness, and that is something that was given names, and supernatural names. Many of the martial artists out of Japan have a name for it, and called Zanshin. And its ability to just perceive an awareness. And it basically means no mind, in other words. It's using something beyond the mind. And it was always proven to be a very, very good thing to perhaps develop or use, something that would be kind of overlooked by others as a result. Many times those others were the ones that got defeated because they didn't have this extra ability.
If you'd like to send us an email, hit us up at dj@artistfirst.com. Here's an email for you, Michael. I think, and Matt lets us know, I believe he did Riley back in 2005. Okay, so that would be, 7 years ago almost. Dear Michael, the Inca Pachacuti, P-A-C-H-A-C-U-T-I, the Inca prophecy believes the, quote, hidden city of Shambhala will mysteriously appear in the year 2012. Michael, how does this relate to the human, to the humanity relationship to the Saturn mothership? Matt in Orville.
Well, Shambhala, well, it's been spoken of in many, many of the ancient religions, that, whether it be pronounced as Shambhala or something else, but it's recognized and known somehow. And it is essentially related to the New Jerusalem, but the New Jerusalem will not be the effective Shambhala in terms of that 2012 event. It has will remain, the New Jerusalem will remain outside of the full view of the planet, in a sense of its, you know, not coming here and being another moon. I believe will remain where it's at. But it has very close relationships to the concepts of Shambhala. And those that are, the very people which are mentioned anytime, whether it be Mayan or ancient Buddhist or Hindu or others, actually have recorded similar individuals. I remember going to so many of these temples in my travels in the Near East and looking at some of the mixed temples. They were half Hindu, half Buddhist, but ancient, essentially ancient, and having legends that are ancient embedded in their carvings and storytelling. And what I witnessed was the very same number, these 12 people, were carved into a position of having a certain kind of extraterrestrial or extra Earth relationship. And it's kind of like divine beings. And these are the ones I just simply call, you know, the ones who I promised to help. And they have very, very similar characteristics, I see, to some of the present rituals that are functioning in some of the religious orders, especially Buddhist. And I was finding that as being very interesting, very something that I'm poignant, I got to pay attention to, because this really reminds me that the events that are preceded us, the events that have preceded us, the influence that preceded us, are not going to end. They're pointing us toward our future events, and these future events will also include these individuals. They're real individuals. They're general title would be something in the like of having to do with guardians of destiny, enlightenment, and awakening, and ascending. I guess you might say ascending peers, and these look to have been operational for a long time, and perhaps have been I'll change this point because there's another point that you made earlier about memory, Z-Man, that might tie into this and why it seems similar in Shambhala and all of these kind of hidden realizations coming through over the ages. One of the things that Nella told me before I had to leave, she took from, I guess, a shelf behind a, it was one of those types of, you can't see a closet, but all of a sudden it opens up and there's stuff in it, and she pulls out this wand, and I recognize it, and I said, it's a wand, and I think I know what that is, to make me forget. So she said, interestingly, she said, oh, I have to do this, I'm required to do this, because she was aiming it toward the center of my forehead. I ducked, I did a quick duck, and of course she didn't hit me, you know, she didn't connect. And that's when she explained, you know, I have to do this, you know, you realize that but I kind of begged her, I wanted to remember everything. She said, no, I have to do this. Now, wands have been seen throughout the ages. It's an interesting thing that wands and royal, I guess another term for it, not a wand, but what royalty holds sometimes, it represents this forgetfulness or memory or the other way around, or remembering. And that's what Shambhala is. It's probably an awakening of what real purpose is all about, not just to, you know, spend time here and just die, but there's a very important purpose. And I'm here trying to help explain it because it's something that hasn't been easily accepted in this planet, especially if those that control the planet and want to control the masses have let loose, then their whole program of control becomes more difficult to do. And it would end up with a new face on our planet if we realize the full program of our ascension process. And that's pretty much coming out pretty soon. So that's where we're at. We're headed for that higher awakening. The place that I am right now is probably a place that they want the whole world to be at. But it's sort of hard when you got basic mortal needs.
Well, and certain people fighting against just providing the basic needs for others. And let's not get into that. Last week, I talked about the Colbrin Bible. I'd only heard about it, and I've since then done some research. It's spelled K-O-L-B-R-I-N. Colbrin Bible, K-O-L-B-R-I-N. And I've only got through the introduction. I guess it's 11 books long, but some of it is available on the web, and I've only gotten through the introduction. I started reading it Thanksgiving evening. Basically, though, as from what I understand at this early point, the Colbrin Bible discusses the fact that they believe a large celestial object will end life as we know it by a celestial event. It will be the return of a massive space object in a long elliptical orbit around the sun. I'm reading this now. It says, known to the Egyptians and Hebrews as the Destroyer, and the Celts later called it the Frightener. Some type of dwarf star, Planet X, Planet Nibiru, something like that, will come pass through the solar system sometime between now and a year from now and cause much problems. So, and I'll, as I continue to read through the book, I'll report back. Again, that's what they talk about on the website, so I hope that's accurate information. What do you think about that, Michael?
Well, you know, that's just something that just, you know, confirms other research that's gone in the somewhat independent directions from independent sources. One of them, of course, has been the Sumerian writings that, again, Zachariah Sitchin did decode a lot of it. Now, of course, having been with the Celestials, and they had never really given me a particular concept of time or destruction. In fact, they said, as far as destruction of our planet is, there's no such thing except in a very, 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 very long time from now in terms of millions of years, literally. But as far as our civilization, I qualified it, and I said, what about our civilization? Will we will continue? And then it says, hope, a long time before the planet goes through a type of destruction, you would have joined us. Put it in that simple terms, you would have joined us here. And the celestials actually have more life out in space, in the domain of the universe outside of a planetary life, to have one in a life that is made in an architectural sphere, a world that is made to order. These worlds are huge, and the New Jerusalem is a tiny speck in comparison to what there is out there. So these worlds are immune to this type of threat that our planet is very much in the window of going through. The idea that I do have is that they're prepared to do a rescue job, of as many as possible. These are the salvable ones, the saved ones, the ones that have been pre-associated somehow with the celestials. And again, everybody forgets. They cannot remember, and if they do remember, they remember something just before that process, and that's just like what I remember, which is terror and fear. It's scary just to be approached by them. After which comes the joy and the great revelation of realizing that these are really our brothers who are helping us ascend. That threat, you know, when I see these huge V-wing mile-long craft coming here, making practice runs, essentially, I'm very, very, excited, because is it possible? Well, recently, there are computers in our home that were kind of like our laptops, actually, failed in the same sense. They went through a kind of a reconfigure all by themselves, and it's something that kind of sparked me to think, my goodness, we didn't do anything special to these things. They just sort of did that. I'm being made aware that certain overrides, certain types of fields and energetic particles can cause some of the certain kind of glitches, similar glitches. And I was wondering, if we're getting a little more energetic out of the sun, or there could be some other celestial object coming in and influencing some of our technology here on Earth. So I'm being more astute, kind of watching it. I wanted to see if there's other things going on that will be happening. And as I said before, the celestials did give us a little tools to watch these things, because they will be precursors to events that can actually cause us some real grief in our lives, much more than just having a few little things go wrong with our technology or electronics or something. But those will be precursors to maybe that event which is spoken of in the Cauldron Bible, or Zachariah Sitchin's Planet X, or Nibiru, or whatever.
You can't help but see the explosion of programs that are on now about ancient aliens, our history, life out in space. As we talk about, is that just a coincidence? And maybe Hollywood's just playing up on the Y2K thing. They're getting the most bang out of their buck, but I don't think so. Do you? Are we being played for Hollywood idiots by all these programs that, for instance, this one I just saw, they talk about, this gentleman's talking about the sun, a scientist that studies the sun, and he's claiming that they think there are, because of observing the sun, they can tell something is disturbing the sun at its south pole and out in that direction. As we're looking at it, you know, something's happening down there, and they don't know what, but they can tell, and they're thinking that something's affecting it, so there must be something out there, you know, down at the angle. And I don't know how you would describe that in a three-dimensional world, but it's not pointing towards us, but it's way down there. And how would we be able to detect that? I suppose we could see it, but, you know, if what they're saying is true and something's out there, boy, this all dovetails together rather well. What do you think?
Well, you know, the south is one of the indicators that there's some, you know, some observatories in Antarctica being one of them that have made some sightings in terms of X-ray phenomena of some kind of extraplanetary object coming in with energetics that can be picked up with X-rays. X-ray, of course, is radiant versus, we talked about whether something can be picked up or not. Well, infrared is just heat, basically, and it relies upon heat. When you have a cold object, but it produces X-rays, which propagate at the speed of light, and you have an observatory which looks at that, and it's at the South Pole, and it sees something coming in. And then you have the sun being affected at its South Pole, which is the same South Pole that we have. But the sun's south side, actually, because the sun has got many poles, north and south. That's what the sunspots are, many loops and magnetic loops and fields in it, but in its relation to our bottom side or south side, the sun's south side, are the same. And from that perspective, there is something that has been observed for quite some time coming in, and we're not sure what it is, and it's not alerting us to what it is just yet.
If officials from around the world have indeed been in contact with celestial beings, the gray men from Roswell, on, and all the other countries of the world, then wouldn't they have access to knowledge from those contacts? And may they know that indeed there is something headed this way? And, you know, are they planning for the aftermath? But you know what? We're not going to be able to answer any of those questions this week because we are at 2 minutes before the hour. And a couple things we need to do before we get out of here. One of them, Michael, please give out the web address again where they can download those shows about the seven circles.
Well, that's at helloearth.com, helloearth.info, I-N-F-O, helloearth.info. And it's on the Michael Connection pages. So that's where it's at. That's Curtis Cooperman's website.
And when Curtis gets squared away, he's going to be joining us on a future broadcast. He's just going to let us know when that happens. But I always want to save the last minute to say the following, that Artists First is pleased to have Michael with us. Michael does this show for no pay. He does this show because he told his celestial friends that he would help spread the word. We are honored that the Celestials have used this platform, among others, to help get the word out there. Artists First will not accept advertising on this program. We are putting this information out there to let you decide, make up your own mind. Remember, it's all about free will. You just got to make the right choices. Michael, from all of our listeners, thank you so much for the time you give us here on this program.
Yeah, certainly welcome, and thank you for the ability to share.
Well, folks, the CBS News is 30 seconds behind us. Thank you for tuning in, everyone. Artie Kornfeld's Spirit of Woodstock Nation begins at 10 after the news, that is. Then a brand new program out of New York City called Comedy After Dark, Hilarious as Hell. That comes on at 11 o'clock. Stay with us, everyone.
Okay, buddy. Hey, we made it right up to the hour. Okay, bro. Thanks very much. Talk to you soon.